for WKU Public Radio and NPR One. I'm Lamont Jack Pearlie, and this is the African American Folklorist.
My old boy from the point, but I'm from Southwest. And every now and then I get put to the test. But I can't be stopped, cause I gotta come through. Ain't got no gun, but I got my crew. Didn't come for no beef, cause I don't eat steak. I gotta play the soul food, chicken, rice, and gravy. I gotta play the soul food, chicken, rice, and gravy. I gotta play the soul food, chicken, rice, and gravy.
You just heard soul food from the legendary group Goody Mob. Soul food has many meanings, but one main meaning is it is food for the soul. This term originates in the mid-1960s when Southern cooking cornered a market in the communities of African-American migrants that migrated from the Jim Crow South. It's also called Southern food, but to me and my family, it was just called dinner. On this episode, we will dive into the traditions of African-American foodways, its meaning, and its family foodway folklore. First, let's find out what the term foodways mean. From Associate Professor and Program Director of the Folk Studies Program at WKU, Dr. Ann K. Farrell.
What is foodways is a great question. So foodways is defined differently by lots of folks in different fields of study. And the good news is lots of different fields of study are really interested in the study of foodways increasingly. Foodways is variously defined as pretty much everything to do with food, from how we procure it, you know, or gather it, to how we prepare it, consume it, and even how we clean up afterwards. So folklorists have been interested in foodways for a really long time. And as with any kind of folklore research, what often the questions that we ask are mostly about meaning. So what does food mean in people's lives? Of course, when we talk about meaning, on the one hand, we think of really positive things, like certain foods mean a sense of home. Certain foods mean nostalgia, you know, comfort. So there are a lot of really positive meanings for food. But many folklorists and others are also really interested in the idea that meaning is not always positive. Food has been and continues to be an area of exclusion as well as inclusion. So while we can think about how food may remind us of our families and our regional traditions and our ethnic traditions in really positive ways, food also has been sort of used as a symbol. If you think of things like food slurs, if you think of things like legend and rumor that are about what we think other people eat that is different from us and that makes them different from us. Even if we think about something like the idea that who you sit down and eat with or share food with suggests that you have equal respect for them, that you see sort of you and them in, you know, on an equal playing field.
In the study of foodways, you find that food, how it's prepared, the locations that it's consumed in play significant roles in social issues, economic issues, racial issues, and other monumental historic events in history.
You know, why was the lunch counter central to the civil rights movement, right? It was central because that was about Blacks not being allowed to sit at the table that whites are sitting at, right? One of the things about foodways that is most important to me is that it sort of is a way to open up almost every possible issue you can think of that we're interested in as folklorists. And again, in both positive ways and negative ways.
So it's way deeper, has a deeper meaning even than what we consider cooking with love, right? Because there's a message in foodways, the behavior of eating.
Absolutely. And I think there's been, and it's been interesting to watch in terms of pop culture in the last decade or so, the way that there's so much interest in food and cooking shows and cookbooks and COVID cookbooks, right? And so there's all this interesting stuff going on, but often it is very celebratory, right? And exclusionary in ways as well. So I like to, you know, come back to what is it as folklorists that we're interested in about food. And as folklorists, we're often interested in, you know, what is the role of tradition in whatever this thing is, right? What is it that we, when we talk about folklore, we're talking about things that we learn from people in our lives in unofficial ways. And certainly everything about food We learn, you know, growing up in our families, we learn about regional traditions. We learn about, again, ways in which we're told that others eat food differently or eat different foods from us. And that is what marks difference, right? And so food is, again, symbolically, it can be a symbol of home and nostalgia and all the wonderful, comforting things, but it can also be a symbol of, this is what makes my group different from your group, is that we eat in different ways and we eat in different things.
We also find that food can be used as a way of controlling populations, markets, and the like.
So the idea that everyone everywhere needs food to survive, obviously, right? So that makes food sort of at the political level and at the global level, certainly something that can be used as a way to get others to do what you want them to do, that food and power are very much connected, that those with access to food and healthier foods and more food and cheap food, that's aligned with power versus those, you know, whether it's a food desert in a city or in a rural place, a food desert somewhere where there is not enough access to food, right? That's about power, economic power, social power. But yes, at the sort of global level, absolutely, you know, who the United States wants to give food aid to, right, versus who we don't, is about whether they are aligning with us politically or not, more than it's about who's hungrier, right?
Thank you, Dr. Ann K. Farrell. Be sure to listen to part two of this episode as my family shares our Foodways traditions. For WKU Public Radio and NPR One, I'm Lamont Jack Pearly, and this is the African American Folklorist. For WKU Public Radio and NPR One, I'm Lamont Jack Pearly, and this is the African American Folklorist.
My old boy from the point, but I'm from Southwest. And every now and then I get put to the test. But I can't be stopped, cause I gotta come through. Ain't got no gun, but I got my crew. Didn't come for no beef, cause I don't eat steak. I gotta play the soul food, chicken, rice, and gravy. I gotta play the soul food, chicken, rice, and gravy. I gotta play the soul food, chicken, rice, and gravy.
To stay consistent with the theme of this episode, we just heard Soul Food by the legendary hip-hop group Goody Mob. On part one of this episode, Dr. Ann K. Farrell, program director and associate professor of the Folk Studies Department for WKU, explained to us what Foodways is and how it's applied to the expression, tradition, and interactions of cultures. In this episode, my Uncle Don, wife, and children share the food traditions we share that's been passed down for many generations. As far as I can remember, from Friday through Sunday meant family, friends, and what is now referred to as Southern soul cooking. However, we never refer to it as such. My 73-year-old uncle, Donald McNeil, shares the story.
Well, I do remember that we always would get together. Even when we were living there or when I wasn't living there, we would still come by and Mom would say, hey, I got dinner coming. And she would be in the kitchen rattling those pots and she would have some potato salad and some collard greens and some fried chicken, and man, and everybody will be sitting at the table, and because we all wait till the food is there, then we come and we say grace, and that could be normally when the big table like that, normally it's on Sunday, but she has small things during the week too on a Friday. She's always trying to keep the family together, and that's how she did it. Those things come way back from our family in Mississippi. That's where my folks were from. That's how they did in those days, especially on Sunday. They would sit back and have everybody there, and they'd make ice cream. The mom made ice cream also because we had the old ice cream maker. Of course, we all helped. And then we had those large dinners like that.
My initial question was based on my memory, but this was happening before me, Anthony, Eric, Monique, and Ashley was ever born, right?
That's true. That's where it started. That's where the tradition you see, that's where it came from. But see, when I'm talking about it, the tradition I saw came from down south, and they just continued it. So, yeah, that was a continued tradition that you saw as a kid coming up or as you got older also. That's what you saw, because that's the way it came, and it continued to roll like that, because it was family getting together where we'd all sit there and talk a little trash, and of course Dad would be teasing everybody while we ate. Mom would make her a pound cake. Man, those cakes were out of sight. Along with the ice cream, man, sheesh.
There were specific and informal roles people had in this festivity?
Well, the role is Dad was always sit at the head of the table, and we wait till everybody was ready. Mom set the table, and then we all sat down. And like I said, Dad was at the head of the table. Or if he decided not to sit at the head of the table, he'd sit someplace else. Because he was the breadwinner. He brought the money in. The house was rolling because he brought the cash in. But Mom was making sure that everything was working right. They worked together as a team, and it was great.
This traveled from Mississippi to Chicago to New York.
That's correct. And my grandparents, that's the way they did their thing. And my parents, they just followed suit with my grandparents. I know on a Sunday, we might be sitting down in the afternoon. We might be sitting down watching the TV, or, you know, that's what we did. Sometimes we ate while we watched TV, or we just sat down and had dinner and talked some trash. Talked family trash.
Right.
Dad was teasing people, and as he teased people, I'd tease people too.
It would be considered a time where everybody got together to catch up on the weekend, what's going on with each other.
It's something like that, because Mom, on the weekends, that's when Mom would make a big dinner, depending on what it was. And she it's not the same thing every week, but she asked Dad what he wanted. Dad would say, yeah, I want this, that, and the other. If not, we'd go to the store, and she might have smothered chicken, smothered steak, what have you. And then no matter what she cooked, though, it was always good. It was always good, and we always had a great time at the table. As a matter of fact, I can't remember any time that we didn't have a good time at the table.
Yeah, neither can I. Let me ask you, at what point did it become called Southern food or soul food? Because this was just what we ate, right? That was passed down and traveled. Was there a name for it? Did my aunt ever say, I'm making Southern food? Or did Daddy Dave ask for, I want country style food? Was there a
Nah, that's what she made. That's what she made. Mom made country style Southern food, because that's what she did. It was never asking for that. Mom would make whatever she made. If she made potato salad, it was always Southern style potato salad, you know? That's what it was. We had Southern food. That's what she cooked. She cooked Southern food. It was always Southern style.
Because that's just what our people were accustomed to eating.
That's what we were accustomed to eating. That's what, not only, that's what we wanted. And, you know, it was not accustomed to. It's just like that's what we wanted. Because Mom did a good job on it, you know? So if you wanted something else during the week, you go out and get that. But when you come home, Mom said, come on down, you know? Man, that lady didn't joke, man. And that's something that I really missed. I miss now, because those dinners, you might see something like that on TV sometimes, but that's the real deal. Ours was the real deal. And I remember having those same type of dinners in Mississippi when I was down there.
In reminiscing on our family dinners that we'd had over the years, it came up the exploit and adventures my uncle and my mother took when they were younger, because they were close. And it came up because their age difference is the same as my two youngest children's age difference. And the irony is they share a lot of the same characteristics, personalities, and relationships. So when they were younger, my uncle had a route in our community, and my mother would accompany him. And back then, they had particular kind of elevators where you had to shut the gate, and my uncle would always lock my mother in the elevator, and she would get mad, and he would have to buy her ice cream floats so she would not tell my grandparents, which is something she introduced to me then my children. Those stories set off a tradition because she really enjoyed floats, and she would, when my children would go by her house, she would always make floats and tell that story to them. So so what we've done now to, I guess, to come full circle, that she's transcended on her birthday, our designated dessert is the ice cream float. And then we tell the story. And we've been trying to work it so we can get you on the phone while we're making the float so you can tell the kids this story yourself.
Yep, that's what we used to do. We used to always get some glasses and put the ice cream in the glasses and put some soda in there, some Pepsi. Or I used to like grape soda and orange soda, put it all in there like that, you know?
As we wrap up, I will leave you with a couple of statements from my wife, youngest daughter, and youngest son.
I started identifying that the foods that my grandmother was cooking were Southern food when I got older. And I started reading about it. I started inquiring, or I started hearing conversation amongst my friends and their family members. And this is how I found out that chitlins was a Southern meal. And this is how I found out that collard greens was a Southern food. You know, a lot of the foods that she cooked or the traditions that she had in her family, you know, I started identifying, like hunting for deer and then going down south to get it and bringing it back to New York. And this is how I had deer meat.
So sometimes me or LG sets up the napkins while mom's making the food, and we pour our parents water, and we set the table.
Well, my dad usually makes the breakfast and my mom usually makes the dinner. Every once in a while, me and my sister take turns on who makes lunch. Usually on the weekends, my dad will make like waffles, French toast, or grits, something special. But during the weekdays, it's usually oatmeal, cereal, or toast and boiled eggs with eggs or something. And as for dinner, my mom would make rice or green peas, beans, chicken. Every once in a while, like traditional is like holidays, we might have something like fried chicken. And then there's those times where every once in a while we order out for food or go out to eat somewhere.
Thank you, Unc, Mrs. Pearly, and Pearly children. We are curious to know about your African American foodways traditions. If you, the listeners, are interested in sharing, email me at lamont.pearly956@topper.wku.edu. For WKU Public Radio and NPR One, I'm Lamont Jack Pearly, and this is the African American Folklorist.